Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the show. This is a podcast about the strange and unusual, the secret and conspiracies, the fringe and the supernatural. This is a show where we do little to no research on our topics. We are not professionals in any field except speculation. This is the Secret Transmission Podcast, and today we're going to be talking about the Waco Siege. I am your host.
Blows McGillicuddy.
I'm your host, Blows McGillicuddy. No, my name's Toby. Alongside me are my asshole co-hosts. Introduce yourself, asshole co-host.
Rudy.
Kristen.
Tyler.
Okay, fellers. So today we are going to be talking about the Waco Siege and the Branch Davidians.
Yep.
Tyler's looking at me like I just spoke Spanish.
Yep.
So, Tyler...
He was, what, an infant when that went down?
What year were you born?
93.
Oh my god. Yeah, okay. Literally, he was an infant when that happened.
No. When's your birthday, October? Mm-hmm.
He wasn't even born yet. Oh my god.
So this case is older than you by several months.
Yeah, no wonder I'd never heard of
that. Well, that makes me horribly old.
But see, this is Waco, Texas. You don't know anything Texas history, or...
They probably didn't teach us in history class.
I feel like they covered it in history class,
like
Texas history or something. But it wasn't something that like we really learned about.
No.
But I could be wrong. Really. I watched a lot of documentaries when I was younger too, so that may be what I'm getting confused.
I was alive in I think ninth grade when it happened.
I was five. Ish. Four, five, whatever.
The good days before I was born.
When I was an only child. Okay, so before we get into the siege, is that how you say it? Siege?
Siege.
Siege? Is it siege or siege?
Siege, typically.
Okay, I'm going to say it wrong, and I'm going to say it right. So just, everyone, don't make fun of me.
Everyone do make fun.
Shit.
Hashtag DBJ.
So let's talk about the Davidians, first off. Uh-huh. Let me go ahead and fill you in, Tyler, of the rundown before we get into the details. The Branch Davidians, people looked at them like they were a cult, okay? The Waco Siege, to sum it up, the ATF kicked in their doors, or tried to, and shit went wrong, and lots of people died. Spoiler.
I think I have watched something on this. They had a shit ton of guns or something, right?
Right. The main guy that we'll be talking about is David Koresh. We'll get into the history of the group before we get into David Koresh or the siege. So now you kind of know what we're dealing with. A possible cult. So they didn't start off as Davidians. The group actually started in 1955. In 1929, a man named Victor Hotef and a Seventh-day Adventist Sabbath school teacher in a local church in Southern California, they claimed that they had a new message for their church. So in 1935, Hotef established his headquarters to the west of Waco, Texas. After Hotef died in 1955, the segment of the group loyal to Hotef continued as the Davidian Seventh-day Adventists. I can't say it. A splinter group, the Branch Davidian Seventh-day Adventists, was started by Benjamin Rodin. Okay? So basically, it's a sect of a sect, or a splinter of a splinter of a splinter. Is that right. Where we're at? I think we're three splinters in on this.
I think so, yeah.
Like I said, Benjamin Rodin is the one that actually made the Branch Davidians. So we're just going to shorten it to Branch Davidians because that's what they do, basically. After Rodin's death, it was taken over by his wife, Lois Rodin. After she died, her son, George Rodin, was supposed to take over, but apparently she had designated a new successor to a man named Vernon Howe, and they fought over the leadership. Vernon Howe won due to George Rodin being jailed for murdering someone, basically, is what ended up happening.
Really?
And we'll get into that in a little while, too.
Right, okay.
So now that you know that Vernon Howe became the leader, Vernon Howe changed his name to...
David Koresh.
David Koresh. So, now that we've brought up David Koresh and everything, I'm going to refer to him as David or David Koresh. We're not going to go back to Vernon.
Because history has... known him by David Koresh
right,
at this point, too.
Right.
So
we're going to go back and learn a little bit about David Koresh. David Koresh was born August 17th, 1959, in Houston, Texas, to a 14-year-old single mother, Bonnie Sue Clark. Before David was born, his father left his mother for another teenage girl. In 1963, when David was four, he moved in with his grandmother, Arlene Clark. His mother came back when she got remarried when he was seven. David described his early childhood as lonely, and it has been alleged that he was once gang-raped by older boys when he was 8 years old. Due to his poor study skills and dyslexia, he was... Me and him have something in common.
Ah, shit.
Well, I feel like I'm in a cult raped? Here every day, so it's okay.
Poor study skills?
Wait, what'd you say?
Got raped by older guys?
That's horrible. Just once. Okay, I feel bad now.
So now you have several things in common. Let's be real here, Toby.
Fuck you guys. So he was put into a special education class.
Another thing in common?
They gave him the nickname Vernie, since his name was Vernon, which I don't know why that was important, but I wrote it down. David dropped out of Garland High School in his junior year.
Oh, big Garland.
Pretty close, huh?
Yeah.
When he was 22, he got a 15-year-old girl pregnant. Okay, all these people that he gets pregnant or supposedly pregnant, I couldn't find anything else on them. They just fall off the map.
Right.
So that girl, we won't hear from again that I know of, but like... I didn't really dig too deep. I just kept going.
Right.
He started saying that he was a born-again Christian in the Southern Baptist Church and soon joined his mother's church of Seventh-day Adventist Church. So this is where he's kind of getting the introduction to the Davidian stuff.
Right.
He fell in love with the pastor's daughter. He tried to tell the pastor that God wanted him and his daughter to be together. The pastor threw him out when he wouldn't leave the daughter alone. In 1982, David moved to Waco, Texas. This is when he fully joined the Branch Davidians. In 1983, he started claiming he had the gift of prophecy. It's believed he had a sexual relationship with Lois Roden, who was the leader of the Branch Davidians at the time. She was 65 years old.
I was just going to ask, how old was she? Because he was, what, in his 20s or 30s?
Right. Yeah. And remember... Her husband was the leader before her,
right?
And he passed away.
And she took over.
He claimed God had chosen him to father a child with her, who would be... The child that they would have would be the chosen one.
Okay.
So he was going to have a child with a 65-year-old woman.
God must have really not liked him.
Lois Roden allowed Koresh to begin teaching his own message called The Serpent's Root, which caused controversy in the group. David announced that God had instructed him to marry Rachel Jones, who then added Koresh to her name. Oh, I didn't realize that. Okay. I don't know who Rachel Jones... Oh, I guess that's his wife.
Yeah.
Okay. David announced that God had instructed him to marry Rachel Jones, who then she added Koresh to her name, so Rachel Jones Koresh.
Uh-huh.
Isn't that how it is when you marry?
Not necessarily.
Could it be Koresh Jones?
Or just drop the Jones.
Hmm. Long story short, what happened with the leadership? George Roden, that I was talking about earlier, his mother was the leader.
Right.
The one that David was having an affair with. George Roden forced Koresh and his group off the Mount Carmel Center property at gunpoint, which where the Branch Davidians were, they call it Mount Carmel Center. Okay. This is probably before the compound was made too.
No, the compound had been up for a while.
Had it?
Yeah.
Okay. See, I wasn't real clear on that either.
They just kind of expanded on it as the years went on.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is what I understood. David and his group ended up leaving Mount Carmel and started a church called Living Waters Branch of Righteousness in Gadsden, Alabama.
Okay.
And in 1985, David and 25 followers set up camp in Palestine, Texas, which is like 90 miles west of Waco.
Mm-hmm.
They lived in buses, tents, and just, you know, roughed it for the next 2 years.
Right.
That same year, David traveled to Israel, where he claimed he had a vision that he was the modern-day Cyrus. He wanted to set up a Davidic kingdom in Jerusalem, And he kind of changed his views about that. He wanted to set it up. By about 1991, he wanted to set it up here in the United States.
Right.
So he came back. I guess he went back to Mount Carmel at this point. This is when George and David really had it out about who was going to run the church.
Right.
George challenged David, saying whoever could resurrect the dead was the true leader. While George prayed over the body of Anna Hughes, who had died 2 decades earlier, David reported George to the McLean County Sheriff's Office for illegally exhuming a corpse. The police told David that he needed evidence to back up his accusation. So they weren't going to do anything
right
till he had evidence, which this is important.
For this
small area, or this small part of the story. David and a small group of about 7 men went back up to get a picture of the body for evidence. Right? Apparently, David or anyone in the group, they did not have a camera with them. But they did have 5-caliber semi-automatic rifles, 2 22-caliber rifles, 2 12-gauge shotguns, and nearly 400 rounds of ammunition, and a map of the area with positions that they wanted to occupy. So, no camera, but they were supposedly going up there to get evidence. George apparently found out about this. And he fired at them with an Uzi submachine gun. They ended up having a huge firefight. George got away. I guess he got shot in the hand and in the chest, but he lived. He survived. And I guess the sheriff showed up. I couldn't really find the report that said that, yeah, the sheriffs came out there. But sheriffs came out there, I guess, and took their asses to jail.
Right.
David and his followers were charged with attempted murder. At the trial, David told that he was getting evidence of criminal disturbance of a corpse by George. Just like, you know, Koresh's followers were acquitted, and in Koresh's case, it was deemed a mistrial. They all got off, basically.
Right.
For almost attempting murder, which I didn't find the exact details. Like I said, I'm brushstroking because there's so much information on this.
Right.
So I'm sure there's a good story in there of how they got away with this.
See, I thought he'd gotten the evidence.
No, no.
And it was federal agents, or it was the police, that George got into a firefight with. So it was Koresh's people he got into a firefight with? Oh, wow. Okay.
That's why they got charged with attempted murder.
Okay. I got you.
So 2 years later, in 1989, Roden killed his roommate, Wayman Dale Adar, who was 56. He got him with an axe to the head in the ballroom. A clue joke? No one? Really?
I got you.
Thank you.
I just didn't acknowledge it.
Fuck you. So, this happened in Odessa, Texas, and...
You should have said the study.
I know. I couldn't... I've never actually played Clue. I just know that there's...
Something wrong with you.
I know. We have it downstairs. Y'all want to play around?
Hell yeah.
All right.
I'll crush you.
Next time on Secret Transmission, who wins Clue?
Kristen.
Oh, you say that, and then I'll just spank you today.
Really?
Yeah.
We'll lose together.
Okay.
So, anyways, he axed his roommate directly in the head.
What, he axed him?
I like your style.
You're getting up on the dad puns early in life. What, he axed him?
Apparently, George had claimed that the man had... He felt that the man had been sent by Koresh to kill him. That's why he did it. But another report that I found says that Adar, or the roommate, Wayman, started saying that he believed that he himself was the true Messiah.
Oh, okay.
So there's 2 different accounts.
Right.
I'm pretty sure I saw an Simpsons episode that was just like this.
Probably based on this.
They called it the Messiah Syndrome. They all went to Israel or whatever.
Ooh, I don't remember.
And like
that.
Homer and a bunch of other people all had the Messiah Syndrome, and they're saying that they're the true Messiah.
I don't remember that. Best Darn Diddly Podcast needs to message us and tell us what episode that is. I'm calling you out, Miles. Find it for us.
He probably doesn't even have to find it. He probably goes, oh yeah, that's episode 148.
Yeah, no. So he was put on trial for murder. He was found not guilty by reason of insanity and confined to a state mental hospital in Big Spring, Texas. And I think one report said that he's still there.
Really?
Which, that'd be 25 years? Wait, 1993? Wait, I don't even remember when this all happened.
89. Oh, 89. Oh, okay.
So
yeah.
He's been there for a while, if it's still now.
Over 30.
So,
almost 40, jeez.
Yeah. Apparently, since George went to the Nutty House, he owed thousands of dollars in taxes on the Mount Carmel Center property, and the government was about to seize it.
Right.
So somehow David raised the money to get the property back. At this point, this is what I think. Now, this research was probably the hardest I've done, because you can watch three different documentaries, and they'll all three say different things about what happened.
Right, you can read three different articles, and you'll get three different stories.
So I tried to piece this together with articles I read, documentaries I watched, and even Wikipedia, just to try to keep things in order, which that didn't help, because nothing... Okay, anyways...
Let's try to go through it the best we can, right?
I think this is when George filed rape charges on David for raping his mother. He tried to throw out charges, or he tried to claim that David raped his mother.
Right.
Because he was pissed off, because he's in jail, he's got Mount Carmel, he's got all the followers.
So a guy in a mental institute...
I already see your point.
...is trying to claim that a guy raped his 65-year-old mother.
A guy who axed someone in the head.
Yes.
No axe pun?
Sorry, I was too distracted, I couldn't hear.
So, when David did get the property back, some of the residents that were living in some of the buildings, I guess, they moved out. And when they did, David found a meth lab. So,
oh, shit.
So he called the police and asked them to remove it, which was the right thing to do if you find a meth lab in your new property that you just purchased.
Right.
So this is something else I couldn't find. On August 5th, 1985, David released the New Light audio tape. I'm not real sure what that is, but I heard it on two or three different sources.
Okay.
So I don't know if this was like a sermon or him preaching or something, but I looked so hard because I wanted to play it, I couldn't find it.
If I had to venture a guess, it was probably his mission statement for his group.
Yeah, basically the source said that he had been told... by God to establish a house of David for his people. So that's what I took out of it, is that it was, like you said, a mission statement. All the males were supposed to stay celibate, but David could have sex with all their wives. Supposedly.
Even though he was married. Probably. Didn't he have kids already?
See, I couldn't really tell when his kids were born and stuff.
I know he had, when all this went down, he had a few of them, two or three kids at least, with his actual wife.
Yeah, I think so. He had a couple with his actual wife. Apparently, he also said God told him to build an army for God and prepare for the end of days. His name was legally changed from Vernon Howe to David Koresh on August 28th, 1990. Koresh is the Persian name of Cyrus the Great. Cyrus is a messiah for freeing the Jews during Babylonian captivity, and David is from King David. Let's take a small break, and when we come back, we'll get into the Mount Carmel stuff.
Okay.
So we'll be right back.
Sounds good.
Be right back.
You sure?
Be right back.
Positive?
Hopefully.
Do you know what you're doing?
Nope.
Okay.
Be right back.
Life is a mystery. Confusion is all around us. The truth is out there. But you won't find it here.
Maybe it was the ghost of an alien that worked for the government.
You know, you remove the alien anal probe out of the story, and it probably wasn't this guy's worst Saturday night.
Welcome to Hysteria 51, a weekly oddcast of conspiracy theories, mysteries, and the unexplained. All viewed through skeptical eyes and the blurry lens of a beer bottle. Listen to Brent and John make sense of it all each week by subscribing. Find us on iTunes by searching Hysteria 51 or anywhere else fine podcasts are sold.
Hey guys, this is Danny Rayban.
And this is Big Ice.
We're from the podcast Regular Irregularities, and we'd like to take the time to thank Secret Transmission for giving us the opportunity to tell you about our podcast. We are regular guys with blue-collar jobs, sharing personal stories and discussing topics with pressing issues, even sharing things you may not want to hear about. So check out our free podcast. That is Regular Irregularities. And again, we'd like to thank Secret Transmission. They're our fellow podcasters, so if you haven't already, be sure to follow them as well.
We are back. So now we're going to talk about the Mount Carmel stuff, and I'll give, this is all going to be like what's going on inside Mount Carmel at this time. By February 1993, about 130 men, women, and children lived in the Mount Carmel Center. By this time, David was married to a woman named Rachel, and he had three children. The Mount Carmel Center was built by the people who lived there. So, right before the siege happened, the Waco Tribune Herald began publishing stories of him abusing children and committing statutory rape, and that he had married some of the underage girls. They had...
The day before the raid?
Yeah, like, it
there,
was like...
There was also accusations of gun... Not gun running, but collecting guns.
Right. The paper said that he... The paper said that he said that he was entitled to at least 140 wives, and that he was entitled to claim any of the females in the group as his, and that he had fathered at least a dozen children, and some of these mothers became brides as young as 12 or 13. In one interview I found, he was asked about all this, so we're gonna listen to David actually explain.
How many wives do you have?
One.
One wife.
Have you committed?
I've always had.
Have I committed adultery? So would you fix that?
Have you committed adultery?
No, I don't commit adultery.
You telling me the truth?
I am telling you the truth.
Have you beaten children?
No, I do not beat children.
I think the girl's name was Aisha.
Yeah, was her parents there? Her parents were there.
Did you do it?
No, I didn't do it.
Like, well, I'm not above beating a child. So that's said.
See, I thought that interview was done well before.
You couldn't smell it?
Yeah, this was done well before. Yeah.
Because some guy came out and made all these accusations about him previously.
Right.
And he was kind of bitter because I think he got kicked out or something, or he left.
Okay, see, and that's another report. And I think I get to him later on in some of my notes.
Right.
But like, that's part of the, there's two or three stories always right. with all this. And it's hard to tell which path you want to follow when right. you're listening to these documentaries or doing, you know. So,
which I think that's kind of funny because, like, in some of, like, the higher, like, Catholic churches, same stuff goes on, and it just, people overlook it.
Well, the thing is, with this
like
particular...
Like, beating those nuns, beat the shit out of them kids.
This particular case, though, well before the whole siege incident, this guy came out and did an interview about the Branch Davidians and saying that David Koresh was this, this, and this. And that's when that clip was aired because they were asking him.
You're
hey.
Probably right. Because this was way before the siege happened.
And then the newspaper articles you're talking about was the day before the siege.
Right.
For some reason, all these papers in the area started printing this like over-the-top sensational stuff.
Sinister.
Salacious.
Salacious sermon? Mm-hmm. I thought it was Sinister Sermon or something like that. We could look it up.
Well, they were calling the newspaper article salacious because
okay,
basically they were trying to say that all this was going on, and they were quoting almost word for word this guy's interview previously without actually interviewing David Koresh about it.
Well, so this is what's interesting about, like, once we do get to the raid and stuff.
Uh-huh.
All these claims were in the warrant for the ATF.
Right, right.
Which the ATF shouldn't... It's a weird... It's our justice system. It's not perfect, but the ATF isn't supposed to be seeking out...
What allowed the ATF in, though, was the weapons charges.
Right. But they added all this stuff in there to, I guess, make the case more priority.
Right.
So, I don't know. But they used that... They had the little bit of evidence for the guns, and then they had a little bit of evidence of...
The only evidence they had, as far as I know and as far as I could find, was that one guy's statement.
Right.
That one guy who was bitter a year earlier.
So.
Period. I mean, there was nobody had come forward. No one had made claims.
Right.
Up in that point. I'm not defending the guy either because I don't know. But I'm saying nothing was real. It was all speculatory. It was all speculation.
Well, like you said, besides the sexual abuse accusations, they were supposedly stockpiling illegal weapons what it was.
Automatics.
The sheriff had been contacted several times about fully automatic weapon fire upon Mount Carmel.
Right. I learned a little something about that, too, in my research about the fully automatic weapons at the time.
Really?
Basically, what got them was technically you could own an automatic weapon, but you had to pay a $200 tax for every automatic weapon you own.
That's another... There's weird details like that that don't quite make sense to me. So, in Texas, you can't own guns. That's our stereotype.
Right.
We all have guns. When you're at the hospital and you're born, they give you a six shooter. That's all there is to it. No. That joke fell flat.
Very flat.
God.
Stop perpetrating a stereotype.
I'm trying to be a stand-up, and no one wants to listen to my bullshit.
Well, if it was funny, that would be one thing.
So, you can... here's the three different reports that I found that started this investigation, okay?
Right, okay.
The ATF did start investigating them and set up surveillance and even had an undercover agent, Robert Rodriguez, on the inside after the report of the automatic gunfire. So, as soon as they got that report, they got an agent in the door and started surveillance on them.
Okay.
A former member, Mark Burlett, is the one that tipped everyone off on the abuse of the children, the guns, and testified during the trials too. So he was a player at the end of it.
Right.
And the third, and when we were talking about this off mic yesterday, you brought more light to this, so you can tell me in a minute. A UPS driver reported a package that had been broken open on delivery to the Branch Davidian residence.
Right.
Revealing all the firearms, and I guess there was like grenade casings or something and black powder in this package.
It was actual grenades. Yeah.
So he reported it to the sheriffs, and that's when the investigation started. So there's three different reasons.
I remember at the time in the made for TV movie, that was the big selling point of the investigation was the UPS driver with the grenades.
Right.
Like a case fell out the back of the truck and a couple grenades fell out.
One of the sources says...
Allegedly.
Allegedly. A lot of this is we need to make sure there's allegedly.
You should title the episode Allegedly. Waco, allegedly.
So one of the sources that I found says that an automatic gun sounds... The automatic gun sounds were from a device called a Hellfire trigger, which does cause you to shoot more quickly. That same source says it's legal to have. And like you said, it's not illegal to own a machine gun or something that...
An automatic weapon.
But you have to pay the $200 tax. But this Hellfire trigger, it kind of sounds like a machine gun, supposedly, but it still helps you. You can... I really didn't understand. Didn't care to look too much into it.
Okay, it was... The weird part about the $200 tax part was that's how they were able to go in. It wasn't because they owned the automatic weapons, is that they had no record that any of those weapons were.
Right.
The taxes. So essentially, they were going in for tax evasion.
Right.
If you want to boil it down.
So apparently, the local gun store in Waco was asked about the purchases made by the Davidians. They had bought over 225 guns from that one store, is what I understood.
Right, that's what I've read too.
With all the questioning, David offered the ATF to actually come to Mount Carmel.
Right.
He offered to open the doors and said, come look, if you got questions. And apparently the ATF declined.
Yeah, they refused to go in.
And apparently this was okay, again, one source was like, this was the only time that he did that. Another source said it was several times, and he called them directly and said, if y'all need to come look at something, we have permits, we have everything we need to make everything right.
The point is, at least one time he made the offer, come on down, I'll let you look around, and they refused to do it.
Right. They were also told that David rarely left the compound, which this was bad info because there's another report where he talks about leaving all the time and going to the store.
Right.
Davidians also attended gun shows, and they traded, bought, and sold at the time, and that's how they made some of their money, was by selling and trading. And they would bring all the right paperwork with them. Everything was legal about it. Nothing illegal.
Right.
The ATF obtained search and arrest warrants for David and other specific followers on weapon charges due to the many firearms they had accumulated. Search warrant W93-15M for the residence of Vernon Wayne Howell, which is David Koresh, and others, signed by U.S. Judge or Dennis G. Green, dated February 25th, 1993. 8:43 p.m. in Waco, Texas. I just wanted to put the...
So today, back then, they were given...
As we record this. Yeah, it's... Mm-hmm. That's funny.
Okay.
Two hours ago.
Okay. Even though he legally changed his name, don't they have to issue the arrest warrant in his name?
You know, I don't know.
Did he legally change it, though?
I think he did.
Yeah, he did. He legally changed his name.
He filed to have it changed, and they approved.
It doesn't matter what your birth name is. They have to issue the... I thought they had to issue
maybe
the warrant.
Maybe that property was underneath that name, Vernon.
Yeah. Well, still, you'd think
You'd get everything converted eventually. You know, you'd have to get all that
to pay taxes and everything on it.
Right, you'd have to switch all that information over. You just have to. You can't just leave it in your old name.
I had a friend who's like, it was almost like she like changed her name legally, but it wasn't changed. Like, you remember who was my boss?
Yeah.
Well, she changed her name to, but her real name.
Right. But still, if she had her name legally changed to then they have to go by because he's committing the act.
On the license, it said
he's committing the act as David Koresh, not as
Vernon.
So they have to issue the warrant. I thought they'd have to issue
that's
the warrant under your current legal name. That's weird that they would do that.
So the ATF even had a claim that David was running a meth lab to try and make drug connection, you know, on top of the guns, but it was unreliable. It was just a hot spot detected by an infrared surveillance.
Uh-huh.
So it wasn't, they couldn't say, yeah, there's a meth lab there because it was just.
You mean after he reported, hey, get this meth lab out of my.
Right. And that's the other thing. Like, why would he report it one time and then turn around and start a meth lab?
It'd be a good cover.
Yeah, maybe.
You know.
Maybe it was a furnace. Maybe he's just burning people's bodies, don't they?
Colt's got to burn them bodies.
Yeah.
Skull bowls.
Sacrifice. Right.
They gotta make bowls. Cereal bowls for all the kids.
Oh my gosh.
I love a good skull bowl. I have to find one.
So the ATF had planned the raid for Monday, March 1st, 1993 with the code name Showtime.
Okay. Really? That's all they came up with?
Yeah, it's just Showtime.
You know, they have some really flashy names for some diabolical shit that they do, you know?
Right.
Operation Northern Exposure.
Oh, yeah.
And now Showtime. It's like, okay, why Showtime? What they about to showcase to the world how
that
fucking powerful
true.
They are?
That is true.
That was my nickname in the Navy.
Showtime.
Yep.
Showtime Schofield.
I thought it was Sugar
Tits.
I could
say my last name, so it was just Showtime.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's what my chief called me.
Now
dang it. That's
now I feel like you were in porn and
yeah,
Navy porn.
True.
Showtime. Okay, sorry.
Make extra
what happens
money
in the
somehow?
Boat stays in the boat.
I'm gonna have to get on the hub later and see if I can find some. Yeah, see if I can find some of your old work.
So, like I said, they had the date, but for some reason they changed it. It was really getting confusing, so I glossed over it, and they settled on February 28th, 1993. The surprise of the visit was lost when a tipped-off reporter asked for directions from a U.S. Postal Service mail carrier. This mail carrier happened to be David's brother-in-law.
Oh, shit.
So, of course, David's brother-in-law called David and was like, hey, motherfuckers are about to knock on your door. When David got word, he told the undercover agent, Robert Rodriguez, that he knew the entire time. He was like, yeah, I knew. Because, so they had it, they were staked out across the street,
mm-hmm.
and they were posing as a frat house. But
really?
But apparently it was kind of dumb because they were all like 30-some-odd-year-old men.
Right.
And they had really nice cars, and they weren't ever gone during the day, like, to go to school and stuff. So, like, I guess...
They didn't play the part very well.
No. Okay. And David knew that the guy was an informant, but just was like, okay. So...
You know, I really like Robert Rodriguez's movies. I'm glad he got away from this and was able to actually produce some stuff.
Holy that's crap, nice. His name is Robert Rodriguez. That's funny. Now people are going to think that's true.
From Dusk Till Dawn. Yeah. Oh, man.
Cabin Fever.
Yeah, he's got some good stuff. I'm so happy he got out of the ATF. He's done
good.
What
do you think he was doing when he was in that frat house?
Exactly. He was
writing movies.
Right.
He had all the time in the world.
So,
he wasn't going to school.
Narking on cult leaders.
Robert ended up leaving the compound. When Robert was asked about the Davidians and what they were doing when he left, he said that they were praying. Survivors have written that Koresh ordered selected male followers to begin arming and taking up defense positions, while the women and children were told to take cover in their rooms. The ATF had lost the surprise factor and did something strange. this is really strange.
Mm-hmm.
They're supposed to just be going to arrest David Koresh, right? Or checking out the property.
I think it was an arrest warrant for him, and then they were going to search the property.
Well, there was other people on the arrest warrant.
Right.
For some reason, the agents started writing their blood type. They were ordered to write their blood type on their neck or arm when they were leaving the staging area. That way, if they were injured, they would have quick blood transfusions on the spot. Supposedly. Hmm. Supposedly. Right. That's a weird thing, right?
Yeah. Like they were expecting bloodshed.
Right. So this is where things go wrong. Both sides blame each other. The ATF says that the Davidians fired first, and the Davidians say that the ATF fired first. Some believe it was an accidental discharge by one of the ATF agents, or it was a ATF dog team sent to kill all the dogs. So they were shooting the dogs, and then the Davidians started shooting at them because they heard gunfire. You know, it was one of those things where everyone started shooting because of confusion.
And I believe there is an actual 911 call from Koresh saying, "They're shooting at us, please make them stop."
Yeah, so 3 Army National Guard helicopters were dispatched. They all claimed that shots were fired at them, but they did not return fire and that they were there just for distraction. During some of the first shots fired, David was shot in the wrist. Within a minute of the rage starting, Wayne Martin called the emergency service pleading for them to stop shooting. The resident asked for a ceasefire, and the audio tapes recorded him saying, "Here they come again, and that's them shooting. That's not us." He even explained that there are women and children in the building. One ATF unit was sent in to destroy the armory and secure the roof. They set up a ladder on the east side of the compound. On the west side of the roof, 3 agents reached David's window where they came under fire. One agent was killed and another was wounded. The window was smashed back in on the other side. A flashbang stun grenade was thrown in and 3 agents entered the armory, which all this footage you can see.
Right.
It was broadcast live. Maybe, was it broadcast live?
No, that footage was the footage that was given to the media
The ATF. Was live.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, the ending was live.
When another tried to follow the 3 men in, a hail of bullets penetrated the walls and wounded him, but he was able to reach the ladder and slide to safety. An agent fired with his shotgun at the Davidians, who were shooting at him until he was hit in the head and killed. It took almost 45 minutes before the gunfire slowed down due to the agents running low on ammunition. The shooting continued, though, for 2 hours. A ceasefire was finally negotiated. One documentary says that the ATF only withdrew when they ran out of ammunition. 4 ATF agents were killed while 16 others were wounded. At one point, David was able to talk to the news and give phone interviews. The FBI cut David's communication to the outside world. Apparently, in the first few days, David had agreed to peacefully surrender, but he changed his mind and said that God had told him to remain in the building and wait.
Also, 6 Davidians died after that first exchange, too.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't just federal agents that died that day either.
Right.
So.
They did manage to talk him into letting 19 children out, but that still left about 98 people in the building.
Didn't some adults go with? I think there were, how many? You said 19 children?
Yeah.
I want to say maybe 20-ish adults.
It happens here in a little while.
Yeah.
I might have that in my notes.
No, you're right. I think after the initial thing, 19 children were allowed to leave, and I think 20-some-odd adults who wanted to leave left also.
Well, see, some of these kids that left were interviewed later on, and they all had admitted that David was sexually abusing them and physically abusing them. So the tear gas that was thrown into the buildings were supposed to force all the Davidians out, but obviously it didn't work because they stayed in there.
What kind of tear gas was it, though? It's very specific.
I think I have it in my notes here in a little while.
Okay.
So the FBI sent, I guess they sent a video camera to David so he could send messages to them or record stuff. This is where he introduced his children and his wives. At this point, the FBI believes that several of the minors are part of David's wives and that he may have up to 14 children of his own still in there. That guy's like a rabbit.
Why do all the crazy ones get to be fertile? That doesn't make any damn sense, man.
On day 9, this is March 8th by this point, the Davidians sent out the videotape to show the FBI that they were no hostages, but in fact, everyone seemingly was staying inside on their own free will. I got a small clip of David telling his part of telling I have David explaining what's going on from his end.
Right.
You know, it's not against law to buy a firearm. It's not against law to buy anything that they sell at a gun show. And when this is all resolved, you know, hey, yellow sheet is legal. An accusation is not. And bringing these tanks and stuff around here, I tell you what, being an American first, I'm the kind of guy that I'll stand in front of a tank. You can run over me, but I'll be biting one of the tracks. No one's going to hurt me or my family. That's American policy here. You could have arrested me any day as I jog up and down this road. You could have arrested me going to town or going to Walmart. Waco is going to bear witness against the ATF. The two agents across the street over here, Robert Gonzalez, I love the guy. I was honest with him. I brought him into my home. He was going to stay here for 2 weeks. All this stuff you guys may want to avoid and deny, you know. You know, he wanted a tour around the place. I promised him a tour. He could have talked to any of these guys around here, anybody. He was free to come and go as he chose. And I do not appreciate it, and never will I ever appreciate somebody coming here with two helicopters and cattle trailers and all that, and pushing people around with guns. Hey, I'll meet you at the doorstep any day, you know, and somebody will get hurt. If you want to keep playing that game, I'm talking to you. Somebody's going to get hurt. Because this ain't America anymore when the ATF has that kind of power to come into anybody's home and kick doors down and things like that. Now, I do understand, someone reminded me of this, I do understand that one of the officers says his gun went off on accident. And that, you know, that was just like a signal and all that, you know. But look, beside the point, ATF, you boys are wrong. Your practices, your habits, yeah. Drug dealers, fine. You know, but even there's always a question, if there's any question whatsoever. The kids or women are involved, damn you, I tell you what, you keep your damn gun in your holster. You send a couple of big, brave, invincible kind of men, you let them knock on the door. If they're so damn involved to where they can risk their lives for the name of the law, then send them up bulletproof, put them in some kind of night armor or whatever, and let them knock on the door and ask the questions first. But no one's going to expect me, when they come busting in on my door with guns drawn and pointed in the air, and someone fired me, that I'm going to lay down and die for anybody. This just ain't going to happen in this country. God speaks to me. I have a message to present. You may not believe that. If you don't believe that, then believe this. Irrespective of God speaking to me. You see this here? See, this is my family. It may not be like your family. You know, it may not be like your family. This one here, you know, he's my family too, right, Joseph?
Yeah.
Tell him, you know. Look in that camera and tell him what you think about it. Who's treated you good?
David.
You know, do you mind that, son? Huh? Do you love Joseph? Your best buddies?
Yeah.
You too, Damon? So, you know, you guys, you do it your way, I do it my way. You got to argue with me, you catch me on the side of the road somewhere, you come and argue with me. You come point guns in the direction of my wives and my kids, damn it, I'll meet you at the door any time. And I'm sorry some of you guys got shot. But, hey, God will have to sort that out, won't he? So we're going to send this tape out now. And I'm leaking in the back here. I got to get this taken care of. And I'm hoping to get stronger. And maybe we can send more tapes as issues develop. I do thank you guys. Sheriff Harwell, God bless you. And, you know, thanks for getting us the milk. And what can I say?
So a lot of things happen in this clip.
Mm-hmm.
First off, the milk thing, while I'm thinking about that, there was something about they asked for milk for the kids. So
right.
That's what he's talking about with the milk. He makes some good points. Basically, they were afraid to release this to the public because it did make him sound good.
Right.
And they didn't want people to sympathize with him.
One thing I did notice, did you catch when he said, if you point guns at my wives and my kids?
He did say that. That's probably why they assumed that there was multiple right. wives.
He himself just said wives, like yeah. multiple wives. Unless I heard wrong, but I could have sworn I heard that.
But, you know, and he also, he makes good points of you know, like, why didn't y'all just ask?
Right.
Why, did, why, what's with this whole thing?
What gives you the power to just come in and do whatever the hell you
right.
want?
Right. And he makes a good point about, like, this isn't America if one group has that much power to just kick in the doors.
Right.
Which is true.
Mm-hmm.
So he
mm-hmm.
makes some good points. So they didn't want him, they didn't want sympathizers, say it for me.
Sympathizers?
Sympathizers. Thank you.
All right.
So David ended up negotiating more time so that he could write religious documents that he wanted to write before he surrendered,
mm-hmm.
or something along the lines of that. Well, let's take another quick break real quick.
Okay.
And we'll talk about the FBI starting to get really restless at this point.
Right.
And how they had kind of a divide in the group, like half wanted to do one thing and half wanted to do another. So we'll talk about that when we come back.
Cool.
Do you like video games?
Do you like comics?
Do you like movies?
I'm Ellie.
I'm Zinger, and we're the host of
Zing This Podcast.
We discuss nerdy topics every week on our podcast. What are some of the best ways to find our podcast, Ellie?
You can search us on SoundCloud,
iTunes,
Google Play,
and Stitcher.
And don't forget, that's Z-E-N-G.
This. We hope to see you guys there. Every week, we have new nerdy topics.
Yay!
Hey there, fellow podcast fans. Do you love comic books and especially Swamp Thing? Get out of the bayou. So do we. Come check out the Parlapod Show, the world's only podcast dedicated to the muck-encrusted mockery of a man himself, Swamp Thing. This is some serious arcane audio. We also have a sister show, Splurch, where we dive into the world of comics and all the crazy aspects of life. Give us a listen at Parlapod.com, iTunes, SoundCloud. Are you YouTube channel, visit our site, Parlapod.com, and consider supporting our Patreon for some really cool rewards and exclusive content. Check us out on PodcastRadioNetwork.net every Tuesday at 9 p.m. Eastern. Join the conversation on Twitter by following at Parlapod. We'll see you in the swamps.
In the swamps. In the swamps. In the swamps.
So we are back, and now we're going to talk about the FBI kind of having a issue within itself, because half the FBI wants to continue the negotiations all the way through. The other half wants to use force.
Mm-hmm.
So the half that was using force started using a couple of techniques to try to force them out.
On a little side note, which you didn't mention earlier, when the feds get involved, when an agent dies.
Oh, yeah. That's right. That's right. Just like at Ruby
all
Ridge.
Because all of a sudden you're like, oh, and the feds are like doing this. And I'm like, wait a minute, hold on.
Yeah, it's just like Ruby Ridge.
Right.
When the marshal got killed, mm-hmm. they had to turn it over to the FBI.
Exactly.
That's why the FBI is now in control of this. So
right.
Good point. Good call.
So, I didn't want people to go, when did the FBI show up? They showed up after people died, basically.
So one of the techniques I was talking about to try to force them out was mm-hmm. the sleep deprivation.
Mm-hmm.
And what they were trying to do was, first off, they were shining big, like, stadium lights on the house at
huge
all times.
Huge spotlights, yep.
So they couldn't sleep because it was so bright. They were also blasting super loud music. They were playing broadcast music, like I said, sounds of jet planes.
Animals being slaughtered.
Yeah, slaughtered rabbits.
Mm-hmm.
Tibetan monks chanting.
Mm-hmm.
They even played Nancy Sinatra's song, These Boots Are Made for Walking.
Right.
Which is one of my favorite songs. I freaking love that version.
Which is ironic because isn't there a part in there about...
We'll get to that later.
Oh.
You're good, though. You're real good. Everyone's like, what?
Yeah, you'll see, guys. I didn't want to jump it. Toby stopped me from jumping the shark.
I saved you because I just didn't think you were going to make it over the shark this time.
Oh, okay. Okay.
New listeners are like, what the fuck are they talking about?
Just throwback. You guys, yeah.
So anyways, this is about the time they started using big equipment to knock down fences and other structures, and even running over and crushing the cars that belonged to the Davidians.
Mm-hmm.
So supposedly there
Oh my gosh, yeah.
They were like, if one specific person in the house or in the compound pissed them off, they would go out and find their car and squash it.
And destroy it, yeah.
Just to...
Or they would punish the kids by running over their little go-karts that they had lined up in the front of the building.
Right.
Which is kind of fucked up.
It is. So I guess...
You missed another point, too, though. They rolled in tanks initial siege.
So tanks are coming in, all the big equipment.
I think four tanks and like two tanks and four APVs is what they had.
Yes. Oh, and you know, I didn't even touch, like, when they started bringing in all the agents, they brought them in on horse, like the cattle trailers.
Right.
So that's what David was talking about in that little clip was, you know, bringing in people in these trailers and da da da.
Right.
So, yeah, I skipped a bunch of stuff. My bad.
No, you're fine. You're fine. I'm trying to fill in holes whenever I find them.
I appreciate it. So, apparently two of the three, like, water reserve tanks that they had mm-hmm. had been shot and damaged in the initial raid, so they were running out of water, basically. The FBI cut all the power and the other utilities, so gas, water, everything.
Typical of a hostage situation, or what they considered a hostage situation, right. Since there were kids involved.
So basically, the survivors were living off rainwater and stockpiled military MRE rations,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Which I don't know if you've ever had one. They're not good.
No.
Have you ever had one, Tyler?
Nope. Okay. Good.
They're terrible. David ordered 11 more people to surrender at one point. So this might be the people you were talking about. Again, so much stuff is happening.
Right.
Let me add right now. This standoff lasted for 50 days.
Right.
So, and what did I say a minute ago? We were day like 9 or 10. So I may have missed a bunch of stuff because there's so much detail. I'm going to have to gloss over a lot of this.
Right. But the meaty bits, if anyone ever wants to look into it, is the first day, the initial siege. And the last 2 days.
Yeah.
Ish. All the stuff in between is basically them being tortured.
Right.
Just to get them out.
So they still couldn't get David to come out after, you know, the 11 people. Mm-hmm. He told them that he was the second coming of Christ and he had been commanded by his Father in heaven to remain in the compound. Apparently there was talk that they would snipe David and a few other of the key Davidians, but they feared this would cause a mass suicide, just like Jonestown.
Right.
The U.S. Attorney General Janet Reno reported that the standoff was costing $1 million a week and that they needed to end it soon.
Well, yeah, roll in heavy equipment,
yeah.
You know, and how many agents were there?
Yeah.
Hundreds?
Oh, a bunch.
Right.
So Bill Clinton was the president at the time.
Mm-hmm.
He told Reno that she can do whatever she saw best.
Right.
So he basically was just like, do whatever. So over the next several months, Janet Reno's reason for approving the final gas attack varied from her initial claim that the FBI had told her that Koresh was sexually abusing children and beating babies. The FBI later denied evidence of child abuse during the standoff. The assault took place on April 19th, 1993. So they ended up using explosives to puncture holes in the walls of the building, of the compound, so they could pump in CS gas,
yes.
Which is tear gas, and try to flush them out. You know, they were trying to flush them out without right. harming them, so they say. The stated plan called for increasing amounts of gas to be pumped in over 2 days to increase the pressure of getting them the hell out.
Mm-hmm.
Officially, no armed assault was to be made, and loudspeakers were used to tell the Davidians that there would be no armed assault and to ask them not to fire on the vehicles. So basically, they were like, don't fire at us, but we're going to pump y'all full of gas, tear gas.
What they didn't count on, though, was that they had gas masks.
Did they?
Yeah.
Okay, see, I didn't see that in anything.
The Davidians had gas masks. Unfortunately, the children did not. They didn't have any ones small enough. So, essentially, they were tear gassing kids. While the adults were, like, trying to do their best to not have them tear gassed.
It's not as bad as it seems.
Yeah, you've had some kind of gases and stuff like that.
Yeah,
do you know what that CS gas is?
Just chokes you up and... Mm-hmm. Cleans up all your sinuses.
Yeah, it drains you. Watch videos of guys getting hit by CS gas for the first time. It does not look like a pleasant experience.
The FBI agents had been permitted to return any incoming fire, but no shots were fired by federal agents on April 19th. when several Branch Davidians opened fire, the FBI's response was to increase the amount of gas being used. When no one came out, apparently they punched holes in the walls to give exits for anyone coming out. At around noon, three fires broke out almost simultaneously in different parts of the building and spread quickly. The government claims that the Davidians started it. Even some of the survivors say that they did it. Like, some of the survivors from inside the building said that, yeah, the Davidians were planning on doing it.
Uh-huh.
And some say it was accidentally started by them, but like I said, some say, like, no, they deliberately did it. Apparently, nine people left the building when it caught on fire.
Right.
Footage of the blaze was broadcast live by television crews. In all, 76 Branch Davidians died. Nothing remains of the building today other than a cement foundation. The entire site was bulldozed 2 weeks after the end of the siege. Only a small chapel built years after the siege stands on the site.
In that footage that they released, you can actually see the tanks condensing the buildings around the fire, like they're piling it all up.
Really?
Yeah. It's weird how they handled it. Instead of letting it burn down and do an investigation, as it's burning, they're like gathering everything up and shoving it in the middle.
Ooh, see, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's weird.
On August 3rd, 1993, a federal judge jury indicted 12 of the surviving Branch Davidians. Their charges were that they had conspired to and aided and embedded in murder of federal officials and had unlawfully possessed and used various firearms. The government dismissed the charges against the 12 Davidians for a plea bargain. The convicted Branch Davidians who received a sentence for up to 40 years were... Should I read them all? Nah. I'm just going to say, I'm not going to do all that.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah. Lots of the... After, I guess, those cases happened, there was a lot of civil suits filed. And there were so many that it was just like, I can't write all these down.
Right.
Because a lot of them, they like immediately lost.
Mm-hmm.
And not very many of them won, I don't think. So, way too many legal battles were held after this.
And it was years after this that these legal battles went on. I mean, it was...
Years and years.
98, 99 that they were still going on.
So, let's get to, I guess, their conspiracies or weird facts about this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Roland Ballesteros... one of the agents assigned to the ATF door team that assaulted the front door told Texas Rangers that the Waco police told Texas Rangers and Waco police that he thought the first shots came from the ATF dog team assigned to neutralize the Davidians' dogs.
Mm-hmm.
But later at the trial, he insisted that the Branch Davidians had shot first.
So he flip-flopped.
Yes. So that's a weird thing. The Branch Davidians claimed that the ATF door team then opened fire at the door and they returned fire in self-defense. So that's what the Davidians say.
Right.
Helicopters had been obtained from the Alabama and Texas National Guard on the pretext that there was a drug laboratory at Mount Carmel. There was, however, no drug-related charges on the arrest warrant served on the morning of February 28, 1993. The official version of the events has always stated that the helicopters were merely used as a diversion, that the crew only had 9mm sidearms, and that no shots were fired from the helicopter. Which, there's some reports that I got Mandela'd, but I distinctly remember shots being fired from the helicopter at one point.
I don't know if shots were fired, but I do know in some of the video footage you can find, they actually show them taking off, and you can see clearly that they're carrying fully automatic weapons.
Really?
So this, with the intent of using them.
This says 9mm sidearms.
No, you can clearly see big-ass rifles and automatic weapons.
But see, what I think this is saying, though, is that they were only supposed to get the helicopters for a drug-related incident.
Oh, okay.
And they lied about it to get the helicopters.
Right.
I don't know if that's what it's exactly saying. So during the final raid, the CS gas was injected into the building by armored vehicles in an unsafe manner, which could have started a few fires.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one theory. Damage to the building allowed the gas to spread, would have been the reason the fire was able to get to three different spots so quickly.
Right. There's an unconfirmed report that the fire actually started in one of the cellars.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
And you can actually see in one of the videos that they released, the smoke coming out from there first, whereas they claim it came from a second-story window in one of the main buildings.
Huh. Between 1993 and 1999, FBI spokesman denied even under oath, the use of any sort of pyrotechnic device during the assault. However, pyrotechnic flight right FS gas grenades had been found in the rubble immediately following the fire.
And not only that, again, in the official video they released, when the tank's pulling out of one of the buildings, you can see it ejecting flames, like it has a front-end like flamethrower on it. It's real quick, and if you can find the right video, they actually slow it down, and you can see flames coming out the front end of this tank.
Weird.
Yeah.
In 1999, a FBI spokesman was forced to admit that they had used the grenades. However, they claimed that these devices, which dispense CS gas through an internal burning process, had been used during an early morning attempt to penetrate a covered, water-filled construction pit 40 yards away and were not fired into the building itself. So now they've changed the story to, oh, no, we did use those, but not in the building.
They weren't in the building.
When the FBI's documents were turned over to Congress for an investigation in 1994, the page listing for the use of the pyrotechnic devices were missing. So they had no records of them, even though they finally did admit to them.
Right.
So you were talking about the Nancy Sinatra song, these boots are made for walking. And that's just what they'll do.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently there's a lyric that is in this song, and it says, I just found me a brand new box of matches. Yeah. And if you play with fire, you know you're going to get burned.
What are the odds?
They played with fire by playing with the ATF and FBI, and they got burnt up.
Actual burning. Mm-hmm.
The FBI bugged the house for video and audio, and they knew that everyone's moves that they were making.
Right. It was actually, wasn't it a British intelligence group that came forward and said, hey, here's what they had?
See, I don't know. There's so much to this case.
Right. Because I think the Brits were spying on the ATF and FBI on what they were doing with the Branch Davidians.
Right. So what do you think?
They might overreact a little bit.
The ATF and FBI?
Yeah.
I think so. What do you think, Kristen?
I think that they may have overreacted, but at the same time, they didn't really, have a very good, they weren't very, secretive about it, so they gave him pretty much, they kind of screwed themselves on, every opportunity of catching him doing anything wrong, because each time that they were going in there, they gave him enough time
U.S. Postal Service guy.
They gave him enough time to rid of anything that he really needed to, and he always knew that. Instead of, surprise attacking, him like they could have, he pretty much always knew that they were watching him, so,
Yeah, that's
true.
He
wasn't going to do anything wrong.
He knew about Robert Rodriguez and his movies that he was writing.
Mm-hmm.
But why do a surprise attack in the first place?
Yeah, that is, okay.
Well, if there was, pedophile stuff going on, then yeah, that's a probable cause.
But still, it's just an arrest warrant. Toby has an arrest warrant on him. He has 20 guns in his closet. They're just going to come to his house and pick him up.
Yeah, they shouldn't. If there was a real cause for the arrest warrant, they wouldn't have needed to put in, oh, he's a pedophile. He might have multiple wives. He may have underage women pregnant. They didn't have to add all that in there.
Or they could have called him and been like, hey, we'll take you up on your offer of coming in and looking around.
Right.
You know,
the only question I have. And it's Texas, and guns are a thing here, but why so many guns? I'm not saying that David's in the right or in the wrong. You can own as many guns as you want, but it's still a very weird thing to do.
Well, you never knew what he felt about the end of the world, though, either.
He was trying to build an army.
Yeah, according to him, he was trying to build an army.
Well, he was.
Right. And one of the theories that people feel like the reason that they fought back was because he felt like, okay, this is the end. This is the apocalypse that we've been waiting for.
Right.
Which that sounds familiar, doesn't it?
It does sound very familiar.
Like we just talked about in our
last week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Tyler, we did an episode on Ruby Ridge where something very similar like this happened.
Only this one's on a much more grand scale than Ruby Ridge was.
Ruby Ridge was teeny tiny compared to this one. This is 90 times bigger because 93 or 4 more people died or something like that.
I think the actual... See, I've heard different things. Some reports say like 70 something people. I've heard 83 people.
Right.
I've heard 90 something people in total. I mean, I don't know. I really don't know what the exact number is on how many people died. It was up there though.
In now, those,
and a third of them were kids.
Yeah, a lot of these were kids that were killed in this particular incident.
Right.
Ruby Ridge, one kid was killed, and not that any kids killed is less worse than a bunch of kids. Like, any time a kid is killed, that's terrible.
But for a group of people who claim they want to save the kids, they sure did kill a lot of kids that on that day.
Now, I'm not sure how I feel about this particular case yet, because I feel like David did give them all opportunities, but I feel like the ATF wanted to catch him. That's why they did things secretly. Like, if you say, hey, Rudy, I'm going to come check your house, you're going to go home, clean up, and make sure I don't see your butt plugs.
I don't care if they see my butt plugs. I really
that's not the point.
Yeah, that's not the point.
But what I'm saying is, you would want to maybe hide them or...
No.
You're not helping my damn case.
I have nothing to hide from anyone. So. Like
Toby and his penis enlargement pills.
Yeah, penis enlargement pills. I would definitely hide those from everyone. Jerk. Well, anyways, but like...
Yeah, those don't work.
Side note.
I'm just saying. It's a scam.
You know that's going to go in the description now. Yeah. Do penis pills work?
Right. I appreciate you.
But, you know, that's the only thing I can think of is, like, why the ATF would try to go through with a secret plan that kept getting spoiled by whether it was the news article, whether it was the mailman, whether it was the fucking Robert Rodriguez. Whoever ruined it, it was meant so that there couldn't be a cleanup phase.
Right.
So they could catch. So I don't know. It's a really weird...
Here's an interesting little side note. I don't know if it's true. I did hear it in one of the documentaries, but the three agents who went in through the window that got killed.
Right.
Supposedly, all three of them at one point during Clinton's run for president were all three his bodyguard.
Right. I heard that too.
If it's true, what are the odds?
I mean...
You know what I mean?
Three of his...
Former bodyguards.
The three men that entered through that window were former bodyguards, and all three men were killed.
Right.
Now, if you watch it, there's a YouTube video, and I'll put the links in the sources below in the description so you can see where I pulled all this information from, or most of my information. But it's going to be a video called Waco Big Lie.
Yeah, the big lie, yep.
And it shows some really fishy stuff. Like, when they're climbing up the ladder, you can see one of the ATF agents reaching on his side, and... It looks like he's trying to grab his gun, or I don't know what he's trying to grab. Maybe he's trying to grab his belt and pull his pants up. It appears that he squeezes the trigger and shoots himself in the leg. And you can see his whole body bend away from, like...
He actually slips off the ladder.
He reacts like he shot himself in the leg.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's just some really weird stuff, like when those three men go into the window, it shows there's a fourth man standing on the outside. They all three go, they throw in a one of those grenades, the smoke grenade things, the tear gas, and then they go in, three men go in, and then that fourth guy throws in another thing of tear gas and just starts shooting blindly because there's this big heavy, like, curtain or something.
Well, they're not sure what he threw in because you see the three agents go in and then it cuts because the guy, the fourth agent is laying prone across the roof like he's, you know, giving him cover fire. So it cuts to where now he's standing by the window and he's got one of his hands in and he pulls his hands out real quick like he'd just thrown something in. And then you see him reach in and he does like a blind burst. And then he like goes, looks in again, and does another blind burst. And then that's when all the shots come out the window.
You see, you actually see bullet holes come through the walls.
When he starts shooting in the window is whenever everything starts shooting back out.
Which, let me add... In the whole beginning sequences that they show, you don't ever see any bullets hitting the ground or hitting the vehicles around the ATF. They show shots of the ATF all squatted behind vehicles shooting and stuff at the house, but you never see bullets coming back and hitting the cars.
Maybe they wanted to bury them that bad that they sacrificed three men.
I don't know.
Blamed it on them.
I'm just saying there's some really fishy things that they caught on camera that just don't add up. Not right. saying that this was a complete conspiracy. I think they did things wrong, for sure. But there are some fishy things that made me even go, ooh, that's weird.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some weird little things.
Just like the Clinton. Three of Clinton's ex-bodyguards.
If it's true. I wasn't able to get the information to find out if that was actually true.
Right. We would have to find out the men that died. We'd have to do background research and figure out what their jobs were. Right. So we didn't do any of that. We're just going off the speculations and rumors off of crazy people on the internet.
I will have to find out if that's true or not. I will let you know because that's fascinating if it is true.
Right.
It'll put chalk it up to my I don't believe in coincidences catchphrase.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
You need a button that you can just press and it says, I don't believe in coincidences.
Oh, I can just say it, so why would I need a button for it?
Because it would be
life
cool.
Life ruiner, Jesus.
Yeah, well, fucking Debbie Downer.
I'm just saying, like, I can get a button Deborah. If you want. I can record it on my phone and hit it every time.
What a fucking...
Way to be a Deborah over there.
Yeah. Now, last episode we were cutting down all the Gusses and now we're cutting all the Deborahs down.
Yeah, yeah.
We're slowly losing our audience.
Kristen was cutting down the Gusses.
Yeah, Kristen was going hard on Gusses. There was a Gus in our last episode that was a no good stinking rat, and she was like, Gusses are never good. All Gusses suck.
And so all two Gusses that listen to our show are going to be pissed now.
Yeah, now Deborah's are too.
Well, I was going to make the comment that the name Vernon sucks, and I would have changed it too, but I didn't want people to get mad.
God, you just want to kill our audience. She's slowly singling out everyone.
Right. Remember, it's, what is it, at Madame Von Doom?
At Madame Von Doom on Twitter.
On Twitter.
If you want to complain about
If you are
Vernon?
A Gus, a Vernon, or a Debbie, at Madame Von Doom.
Well, good thing I don't check it that often. So.
And you will get a response in about a month.
Yeah. So, anyone have any comments or anything else to add to this crazy incident?
I'm going back to my, this is why the federal government should never be trusted. At all. No matter what administration's in charge.
Or what he's doing inside.
Huh?
Yeah,
who's
what?
Doing inside?
Even if he is being... Even if he's, like, there's pedophile stuff going on, like, that doesn't...
Allegedly. It was all... strictly conjecture at the point
now,
of the raid.
Supposedly some of
was
those...
Was there pictures or anything of anything?
No evidence.
Everybody's
like
innocent.
It got
it was
burnt up anyway.
It was one guy's testimony.
Not true, let me tell you.
One guy's
not
testimony.
True,
innocent until proven guilty.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, not in the dog case.
What dog case?
With the bark collars. Remember they said all somebody has to do is accuse you and then they can fine you for it.
We got the dogs.
They don't have to have proof.
We got the cops called on us because our dogs were barking. And basically they were just like, someone just has to accuse that your dogs are barking. The police don't actually have to hear the dogs barking.
And
you
I was
can
like,
get, you
oh,
can get
yeah.
fined for it or something crazy
and
crap.
Like, oh, okay. And he goes, what do you mean by that? And I go, well, that's like me saying, well, I know a guy and I think he's a murderer. So you're just going to go arrest him? I was like, but you have no proof. And I was like, I walked outside. There's two other dogs barking. And I was like, so just because someone points a finger at me, then I automatically get the fucking.
Like
point,
I said,
point a finger at all your neighbors.
Yeah.
Oh, don't
then the
worry.
FBI
I'm calling,
can
raid I'm calling the cops.
You know, when you point at someone.
I am now a cop caller.
When you point at someone, you have three fingers pointing back at you. Unless you lost some of those fingers, then you probably would have less.
Usually. If you lose a finger, you have less.
Usually.
My thumb points back at me as well.
Mine does too. I got a hitchhiker's thumb. So anyways, anything you want to add on this? Who do you think was in the right on this situation? Let's get down to that. Who was in the right?
Wasn't he guilty?
No.
No, they never...
Supposedly, he wasn't. He ended up not being guilty of anything.
Of any of it.
The Davidians. Well, okay, the child molestation or statutory rape, whatever you want to call it, is in the air because some of the survivors did claim that, it was
right.
happening.
It was great.
But that was after the fact.
That too.
There was,
yeah,
it was after the fact. It, you know,
this is after Mount Carmel had burnt down.
Right.
So,
but for them to put it in initially is kind of bullshit because they had one guy's testimony, period.
Right. They didn't have any proof or evidence.
Right,
it was just someone saying, just like us with the dogs, someone was just like, hey, yeah, they got kids up there and they're diddling them.
Or it's just like Pizzagate. it's just people's conjecture. There's no real proof to it.
Right. Right. Yeah. Okay. Pizzagate's perfect example because right. it's just all everyone saying, well, here's my proof, but it's not much proof.
Right.
Shouldn't this been a thing where the CPS came in and interviewed these children?
Right.
Yeah.
Instead of
okay. See, that's the thing. ATF should only have deal with alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, just like their name says. Child Protection Services should have come in for anything molesty type.
The only thing they really had was the tax evasion on the automatic weapons. Period. That was it. If they would have paid the $200 fines for each of the automatic weapons that they had, it would have been a non-issue.
But supposedly that they really didn't have automatic weapons. They had that Hellfire trigger. See, and that's where it's gray, too.
Well, okay. Well, I understand that. My understanding is also that they actually admitted to it later on that they did have automatic weapons.
Really?
Yeah. A couple of the survivors mm-hmm. said, oh, yeah, we had automatic weapons.
Oh, okay. Well, let's just say they did then. But yeah, if they would have just paid the $200, everything would have been
kosher.
Right. Yeah, so it should have been a fine.
Right.
They should have been fined. Not
had their shit kicked in.
But they now remember they also tried to put the drug charge in there too. The methamphetamine lab.
I don't remember reading that. I thought that was kind of like one of those little secret after the fact things that they tried to throw in.
Maybe.
To justify the ATF being in there.
I mean, who knows?
Wouldn't that be the DEA department when they come in and
or would it be the DOA or DOJ? I'm sorry, Department of Justice.
What about
since it's a federal agency?
What about
involved?
The DOA?
What's the DOA? Dead or alive?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I don't know what the DEA does, to be honest. There's so many...
Drug Enforcement Agency?
Oh, okay. Yeah. There we go. Okay. Yeah, I guess... Okay, so there's... That would make sense. ATF for the firearms, DEA for the
right, for the drug charges.
And Child Protection Services, CPS, for the children.
Yeah, you get multiple agencies involved, and you just go, hey, we got warrants for all these. We need to make sure everything's good.
We're going to take the children over here. We're going to search for a drug lab. They're going to look at your weapons.
Right.
That's how it should have been handled.
Right. Especially when the guy's like, come on in.
Yeah.
Several times. Come on in. Supposedly several times. I know the ones he for sure said, hey, come tell. Because he actually, the place he was buying the guns, like, dude, we got the ATF here. And
yeah.
You know, They're asking questions. He's like, next time they come in and bother you, tell them to come on over.
Yep. I guess this is going to wrap it up. This one went a little long. It went a little long, so...
But it's very effed up.
Yeah. And there's a lot of debate on, like, what's right and what's wrong in this one. So...
I suggest look all this shit up yourself, because there's a ton to go over, especially since the case is, like, 20-something years old now.
And if you are really interested in this, watch 2 or 3 documentaries.
Yes.
Because you're not going to get the full story by watching one. Trust me, I literally had 2 or 3 going at the same time, and I would watch about 15 minutes of one, and then I'd flip over to another one. And I'd watch about 15 minutes, and then I'd flip to the other one, because I wanted to hear... Because, you know, they usually sync it up in about the same order.
Right.
And you could get different pieces of stuff that they don't talk about in the other one. I don't know. It's nuts.
And not only that, but you got like 3 different versions of the same story.
Right, right.
So, yeah, it's weird.
Okay. Well, I guess that's going to do it for this episode.
Sounds good to me.
Love you.
Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Ciao.
Thank you for listening to our discussion on the Waco Siege incident. We hope that you'll go run over to iTunes and leave us a review and a couple of good stars. And also, don't forget to subscribe. If you are not an iTunes user, you can find our show available on Stitcher, Google Play, and YouTube. All you have to do is search for Secret Transmission Podcast. You can catch the latest reruns of our episodes on the podcastradionetwork.net at 9 p.m. Eastern on Sundays. That's podcastradionetwork.net. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Secret Transpod. That's at SecretTransPod. Or you can send us an email if you need to get in contact with us at secrettransmission@hotmail.com. Please go like our Facebook page that we have, and we hope you come back and listen to us try to explain the unexplainable. Coca-Cola. Give me some tests, Kristen.
Test, 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 test.
Rudy?
Test, 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 test.
You need to come down a test.
Test, 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 test. Come down.
Tyler?
Way low.
Test, test, test.
Testosterone?
Test.
Do you ever really expect a straight answer out of me?
No.
Okay, good. As long as we're on the same page here.
Stopped up every time I'm up here in your room when I was getting stopped up.
I'm glad all of this is recording.
Allergies have been really bad this few weeks anyway.
What's the magic word?
Right. Wait. Fucking now?
She's sick. Don't let it.
Oh yeah. You're trying. This was
spit on you, Tyler.
This was a ruse.
I don't get sick. I have an awesome immune system.
Here, take a drink.
Those reptilians and their immune systems.
I spent.
Wait a minute. That's about the time I realized she was an 8-story tall.
She's an 8-story tall?
I slept in a room with 80 other people, so. I have a pretty good immune system.
Girl Scout cookie motherfuckers outside of everything today. Oh, yeah. Can I buy some Girl Scout? I want to be like, you already asked me, kid. Spend some of your money on fucking education. Remember what you were asking me.
The girl in front of Tom Thumb asked me, and as she was asking me, she fell over off the back of the
scooter.
She was on like a you know those little barricades to keep trucks from like or cars from hitting like the front end. She was sitting on one of those, like the horizontal ones, and she like flipped over backwards.
And then you went, you know, ha, you little bitch.
No, well, I actually legitimately was like, oh, are you okay? No, thanks. I'm good with cooks.
I'll be walking fast because like I'm kind of in a hurry to go store to store. And those little girls will, like, run and chase me down, yeah. Like...
Hey, mister! Hey, mister! Give me some cookies!
The I'm thing like, is, you know, I've seen you, like, 4 times, but now I don't think I'm ever going to buy any.
You can get the same freaking cookies from Dollar General.
The Dollar
General? For a dollar.
Yeah, for a dollar. They make all those cookies.
Mm-hmm.
And they taste just the same.
Yeah, but those don't help out the Girl Scouts of America.
That's right.
Yeah, Girl Where's Scouts of America patriotism? Don't... They don't support... What was it? They were against gay rights or something.
No, they weren't.
Yeah, they were. No, there was they're something not. Going on.
I think that's the Boy Scouts.
They want gay
Eagle
guys
Scouts,
to...
Cub Scouts, the Raccoon the Scouts, Scouts, Lion Scouts.
They wouldn't let the transgender boys in.
The Trans Scouts. We're the Trans Pod. Secret Trans Pod is our
twiddle handle.
Oh, I've been recording this entire time. This is all an outtake.
It's your outtake, bub.
Okay. The ATF obtained a search... sorry. Let me get a drink. Y'all hate me, don't y'all?
I do, secretly.
I don't hate you secretly. It's pretty overt.
It's open.
Fine, I love you.
Ah, 1 out of 3, not bad.
Well, he's your brother, so technically he has to by blood.
That's true.
It's like in some secret contract. And
your secret contract. Okay.
He got married? I thought he died.
No.
Mandela, bitch. Cause,
like, deja vu. he brought this up yesterday.
Last week?
Oh, last episode.
Last week. God.
He's old now.
Okay. He's old. So we are back, and
Scott, they're eating a lot of pizza and wings. Well, one piece pizza, but I ate all the wings.
Are you going to stop sucking on that?
Are you going to stop sucking on things?
I try.
We'll never stop.
Never began.
That's my secret.
Call it secret trans pod for
a
reason.
I don't suck because I don't stop
sucking.
Because
you blow. You don't suck because you blow.
I am your host.
Blows McGillicuddy.
Blows Kimasuki.
I'm your host, Blows McGillicuddy. No, my name's Toby. Alongside
me. Ready to say goodbye, Roger.